Ballhawks.
Hey, I'm just here, so I won't get fined.
Hey und herzlich willkommen zu einer Sonderfolge des offiziellen Podcasts der German Seahawkers.
So y'all can sit here and ask me all the questions y'all want to. I'm going to answer with the same answer, so y'all can shoot if y'all please.
Einen wunderschönen guten Tag und herzlich willkommen zu einer neuen Sonderfolge Ballhawks, dem offiziellen Podcast der German Seahawkers. Mein Name ist Daniel, neben mir sitzt unser Präsident Lukas und heute begrüßen wir euch und einen ganz besonderen Gast zu Ballhawks. Wir haben die große Ehre und das Privileg, Seahawks-Legende Michael Bennett bei uns in Deutschland willkommen zu heißen, genauer genommen in Düsseldorf. Wir sitzen während der American Football Madness auf der Tribüne der Merkur Spielarena. Die 50-Yard-Linie liegt genau vor uns und wir dürfen Mike ein paar Fragen stellen.
Touchdown, Seahawks!
Competition Wednesday, das Thema der Woche.
Mike, welcome to Germany.
Guten Tag. Hallo.
How are you? You good?
I'm super good. I'm super excited about being in Germany. I know it's a long trip from Hawaii, but it's been very gratifying to come into such a nice city. And walk around all the nature, all the beautiful buildings, the museum, the nice people. I just had a hot dog with German mustard, which is a little different from our mustard because I feel like our mustard has like a little, you know, a little zest to it. This has a little sweetness to it, which I'm not complaining about.
You like it?
It was good. Nice. And I have this cup too. I don't know. This cup is very interesting. But yeah.
Perfect. So just... let's kick it off. Michael, these days, Netflix is famous for sports documentaries. If they were made to make a series about the Legion of Boom, what scene would you open episode one with?
The episode one, would I open the scene one? I probably would open up with the not handing the ball off to Marshawn and then just rewind from there.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Perfect. You were part of the legendary Legion of Boom. In your eyes, what made that defense so special on and off the field?
I think what made it special was our connection. I think the brotherhood connecting on such a high level. I think that's really what I think that's what made us special is that physically we were great, but intellectually we thought the game. And then friendship, it was like really friendships out there that made it very beautiful. And it was just pure.
So it was... more like about the team and the people in it.
The team and the people in it, and then competitive, being super competitive every week and finding a way to dominate and coming for one common cause and making sure that we're able to win.
Mm-hmm. Okay. The Golden Seahawks era was also when the NFL really took off on free TV here in Germany. We actually interviewed Cliff Averill in Hamburg back in 2018. What did he tell you about the growing Seahawks fan base over here?
He liked to tell me about Hamburg. How long was he here for?
I believe like a week or something.
Yeah, he liked Hamburg. He was telling me how cool it was. And he just said that he was super surprised about the amount of people that love American football. I mean, even talking to some of the guys on the fire, like, you know, like they don't get paid the most. They don't have the same things we have. Maybe it's not even some of the things that people have in high school football in Texas, you know?
Yeah.
Like they work in their jobs, they play, and they just love the game of football. Talking to so many people last night, like I kind of almost made cry a little bit just because like people were telling me stories about like how American football, like, yeah, man, I was injured in the hospital and I had a disease and I couldn't walk. And when one day the only thing on the TV was American football and I saw myself as one of those people, like, that's a very emotional thing to hear, that how sports can bring people strength. And I think that was very interesting. And then also how committed they are to this, regardless of the pay, but just it's pure love.
It's pure love.
It's pure love, you know. If you're playing football in the league out here, it's literally pure love. I don't think most Americans would play if they weren't getting paid.
Yeah, so there are also like hobby players who just do it for the sport.
Yeah.
The ELF is a semi-professional league, and there is a league just for, I'm working a noble job.
Yeah.
And I'm playing football on the weekend because it's fun.
Yeah.
It's different over here.
It's different. I love it, though.
Yeah.
I love it because I think there's a nostalgia around that. It reminds me of growing up as a kid. And, you know, you just go to play football in your neighborhood and, like, you don't care about no cameras. You don't care about anything. You just love playing football. It's like our neighborhood versus that neighborhood. And it's like, there was some honesty. And I think sometimes where capitalism gets mixed up in these kind of things, it takes that purity away sometimes. So to see the purity at that level is emotional for me to see that, honestly.
Okay. Talking about love, German Seahawks fans love the Seahawks and they stay up until 6 a.m. for night games. Would you do something like this for a sports team?
I would.
Yeah?
Like, I love tennis. Like, I love tennis. Like, I play tennis every day, all day. My wife is like, why are you watching tennis on YouTube? You just got done playing it. But I just love the game. So I would stay up in the middle of the night to watch a match. If I was watching Djokovic or Alcaraz or Sinner or, you know, Zverev or Coco Gauff or, you know, just all these players, I would stay up to watch a match, yeah.
So you can relate to that passion.
I can relate to a passion. Guess how I feel about tennis, right? It's like, I play tennis. I don't have no thing about it, but I like the way the game feels. I like the thing that it brings to me. I like the energy that it kind of has. I like that it's calming for me. I think that's something that I like about the sport. So I think I would do it too. Like, I would stay up to watch it. I've done it.
Cool. So tennis is pretty international, right? And the NFL tries to get more international. What do you think about the NFL and American football as a truly global sport?
I think it can be global, but I think it takes like a true commitment from the NFL. I would predict that it'll take like $100 million investment to like really trying to get it going, because you would have to, like, just hypothetically speaking, you would have to have like a team here for like 1 month, like a several, like you would have, say you have Munich, maybe you would have like 8 games here, you know, maybe you have 2 teams.
Or like the Jaguars based in London or something.
Yeah. I'm just saying, like, you could have 2 teams, you know, 1 month here, like the Seahawks is 1 month in Munich, and they play 4 games here, like, yeah. 2 away games, 2 home games.
So really, yeah. Over the sea, like, month for
yeah, you got to have, like, we'd have to have, like, 2 games every month. Like, there's 2 games here every month.
That's
and
great.
A team stays for 2 weeks. They play against another team, the last team, you know, they'll stay, you know, like, yeah, maybe the team plays and the last team, they come here, they play, but then they stay another week and you would have to continue to, like, do that.
Mike, you should talk to Roger Goodell about this.
Yeah.
I would love it.
No, I think it could be done. I think there's, like, several markets that make a lot of sense that would be into it.
And Germany is in the heart of Europe. Why not?
I think Germany, I think too, Qatar, like Dubai too, because I feel like they're very, like, whatever they do, they're like very, like,
into it.
If
they do something,
like, they
100%.
Just took over boxing. They just took over boxing. I'm like, we can't even see a boxing match anymore because it's always in Dubai. Qatar is like, it's like, what happened to Canelo? You can't even see him.
Hopping around the world. Hopping around. You're here in Düsseldorf as a Seahawks legend and ambassador. How closely do you still follow the team these days?
Oh, I follow the Seahawks very often. I do a lot of stuff with the Seahawks as far as like community kind of stuff. Like, even coming here, I'm like, I don't know, Mario. You want me to go to Germany? And how much y'all paying? I don't know. That's not enough, man. Y'all got me staying where? Like, you know, I'm 4 seasons, but okay, I can do it because it's like, It's the passion that I see that they're put into the community and this idea. Every time I go to Seattle, there's always something to do. There's so many people really affected. My time in Seattle, I think really I was a good player, like, but I really think my commitment to community made me a part of this, the Seattle community. Like, it's because I did so much in the community, whether it was like Native Americans, whether it was, you know, police brutality. I was just in the community a lot. And still to this day, like, me, Cliff, and Doug, like, we retire, we still have our Champions of Change. We still do so much stuff. If the Seahawks ask me to do something,
it seems like we
come back and just do it, because it's like, I love the city. I love the people there. I love the organization. Like, I don't have no ill will for the organization. I think it's really hard not to do that, right? I think as a player, you go to a team and you get cut and you, like, say, fuck the team. Fuck everybody. I got cut. I hate everybody. But then it's like, you realize the older you get, like, that's just business, you know? At some point, everything has a shelf life. At some point, you have to fire somebody. It doesn't mean that you hated them, but it wasn't the right thing for the business at that time.
Yeah.
And I think it takes a lot of time to really realize that. But then you realize that in between that, you know, you get to know John Snyder just a little bit more.
Yeah.
You get to know Pete Carroll just a little bit more. And, like, I never have to have, you know, like, I come to Seattle, I walk right in the stadium, you know what I'm saying? Like, I walk into They're like, Michael, you don't have a ticket. I'm like, I don't need a ticket.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't want a ticket. I wouldn't want to be somebody that needs a ticket. Like, it's because...
So I believe nobody would ask you for a ticket if you just walk into the movie.
Yeah,
Mike's sitting over there. Just as usual.
Yeah. My wife was like, you're just going to walk into the stadium. I'm like, hey, it's my house. You know, like... So, like, I love Seattle, but so I do anything to help the Seahawks and also help the game of football.
Awesome. So there were plenty of change in the beginning of last year for the Seahawks. How do you like how Coach McDonald runs the team?
I like Mike. You know, first of all, I like him as a person. I think he is very young, very energetic. I think he wants to change how football is being played, challenge the norms. I think fans, too, are probably tired of the Belichicks. Like, you know, well, we love Belichick. We love those old coaches. But, like, it's time to see what innovative thing people can do in football. How do people move the game? How is it changing? I think there's a new fan base coming. People want to see younger acquisitions. Some coaches, like the Steelers, they don't make no trend. They keep the same thing, right? But every year they get the same results. They don't make it to the Super Bowl, you know? Like, and every year they're like, we do this the Steeler way. I'm like, okay, like, maybe it's time to do it another way. And I think it's time that when I think about with Mike, I think he's, like, changing the culture. I think at one point all the players are like, oh, he took all the Legion of Boom stuff down. Now we call him Mo Kelly. Like, Mo Kelly, what'd he do? He took us down. But then I was talking to Mike, and I was like, it makes a lot of sense. It's like,
new beginnings.
It's new beginnings, and you respect the past, but you want to build something new.
Yeah.
You know, you can't walk in the shadow of other people sometimes. You want to continue to build. I think Mike has a great, you know, instinct of football when it comes to defense. I wish I could have played on defense with him a little bit. But I think the Seahawks are going to be really good. I mean, there's obviously some questions around the quarterback position, right? You go from Geno Smith to Sam Darnold. It's like a change for a change kind of situation. It's like Kanye gets rid of Kim Kardashian, but then he takes on Bianca. You know what I'm saying? They're both the same woman. You know what I mean? Like, and it's like, is that the same situation with Sam Darnold and Geno Smith? It's like, Geno's really good, but is he the guy to get you over that hump? Can he do the thing that rare people can do? A game that comes to the line and there's nothing else to do, can he make the play? I think that's what it comes down to Sam Darnold. Can Sam Darnold be that guy? We know that he has talent. We know that he can make big plays, but that crucial moment in the playoffs last year, I mean, that's going to haunt him forever. He couldn't make any throws. For some reason, the Sam Darnold magic went away. The lights came on. They became super bright.
It was like this one moment where he again saw ghosts.
Yeah.
That's what everybody told about him.
And he lost so much money.
Yeah, he did.
If he would have won that game, he would have made 200. It would have been. He would have had a $200 million contract, right? Because but he saw them ghost again.
And it would have been a big problem for the Vikings to decide what should we do.
Yeah.
Do we go with a rookie or do we put money on Sam?
Yeah.
It's difficult.
Yeah, it's difficult. But I think Sam, I think this situation might be a little easier for him. I think they're like he doesn't have that ghost of him not somebody behind him ready to take his position and could just focus on it. I think it's gonna be interesting. I think the Seahawks got to run the ball better. I think that's one thing I respect about Mike, right? It's like Mike came in. He saw the problem.
Yeah.
He said, look, I hired this guy. Yeah. This guy didn't run the ball. Like, he didn't run the ball enough, you know? The defense is on the field too much, and he fires him. I think that takes courage. I think that's what I'm saying, that what makes Mike is like he saw the problem early on, and he didn't allow it to happen for 3 years and say, oh, let's get better. Like, nah, we're not running the ball. Sorry, I got to let you go.
He called for physical game, and there was no physical game with Grubb. Now he tries it with Kubiak, and I think it's a good idea.
I think it's a great idea. Yeah. I think Kubiak comes from the line of, you know, stretch runs and the history of those kind of defenses with his father playing, you know, under – and coaching under Mike Shanahan, like all those kind of like the historical, like, and then he's young.
Yeah.
It's like, it's two really young minds, and it's like, well, I want to line up five people this way and run it to the left. It's like, yeah, it's like, I think there's something about that. I think you saw a lot of young people coming in the NFL.
Yeah. So, Nick Amonbori is already being compared to Cam Chancellor. Some people are even.
Stop it. Nobody's Cam Chancellor. We have to stop this, man. We have to just stop it. It's not fair to anybody to be like, you know, like, this guy's the next Cam Chancellor. He's not human. Cam Chancellor's not human.
Yeah, you're taking away the rest of my question, because what do you think about these kinds of comparisons?
I think they're asinine.
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense. He's not, it's like Devin Witherspoon's a good corner, but he's not Richard Sherman. You know what I'm saying? It's like two different body types.
Different kind
and,
of
and he's
player.
A great corner, but then it's like Sherman's this lifetime 6'4" cornerback. That's a different position, I think, with Cam Chancellor. I'm just like, the Seahawks, the Legion of Boom is not the Legion of Boom without Cam Chancellor. I'm not even just talking about because of the big hits. I think because you're able to be in nickel defenses on first and second down and still have somebody that can fill the holes on those plays. So that really was the key. Now you can put me inside. You can have a fast defense on first and second down, and you can cover people. I think that's what really was the key to it, right? It's like that's the key to it.
I watched some plays of you yesterday, and when you played outside rush, you were like disruptive as hell.
Yeah.
And Cam found that niche where he got to go. Yeah. And it's the same with Jerome Reed. He found that space for himself. You made it possible for him, and he attacked it.
Yeah, that's why I say it. So I think it's unfair when you compare. And I think that was some of the problems that the Seahawks did with
Chase.
They chased against they did. And I think that's kind of where you needed Mike to come in, because you needed somebody who was like, look, that was rare. Like, that's not – we can't get another Jackson 5. You know what I'm saying? Like, Michael Tito, all the, that's just one Joe Jackson. Like, some guy got to be somewhere in a small town with nothing to do, and he's just making babies, right? And he's, like, making music. And it's like, he has Michael Jackson, you know what I mean? He has Janet Jackson. He has, you know, Jermaine. It's like, it's just rare, you know?
It's rare. Perfect. So, that was fun. The Seahawks are in rebuild mode now, and from your golden generation that won the Super Bowl, there's no one playing by now. Was it hard for you to retire in 2020 and change
it was super
to normal
easy.
Life?
It was super easy for me, because I could have kept playing like 4 more years. I just woke up one day and was like, damn, am I going to be so injured that I'm not going to be able to think? Because it's like, at some point, I mastered the body. Like, I mastered what a human could do with the body. Mm-hmm. What's the highest level of thing that a human can do at the highest point? I did that. You know, whether it was injury, whether it was like playing through pain, I mastered what a human body can do. And I wanted to see what I could do. Could I master my mind at that same level?
Yeah.
And I think that's why retiring to me too was not as difficult, is because it was hard to like say the words retirement. What's up, guys? You guys good?
Yeah. How's Germany?
Germany's great. Germany's great. I'm coming back. I just got me a house down the street. In Dusseldorf on the street, yeah. But it wasn't as difficult as I thought it was gonna be. I also think because COVID happened too.
Yeah.
And I was able to have like a lot of alone time, you know, with my family. And I was like, man, like, this is what it's really about. And I think that's really kind of what kind of pushed me.
It was a perfect moment to
walk
not,
away.
Yeah, to walk away, to not get into another busy situation.
Yeah. Okay. That was weird.
All right. So what lesson from your playing days still sticks with you today? Maybe something Pete Carroll advised, or I don't know.
Oh man, I think so. I think a lot of things stick with me, like relationships, first of all, because it's like, me and Cliff, like, we became brothers after this. We travel together, our families play together. That's one thing. But then also, I think what Pete Carroll kind of taught me was about competition, not just in a sense of like competing for the sake of winning, but competing for the love of a passion of something that you really are committed to, you know. And I think that's something that I really love. It's like, even now as a designer, like going back to school for design and architecture and all these things, it's like having this idea that it's never about me. Like, as a designer, I'm like, I can love the chair so much, or I can love this building so much. But if somebody has a better idea than me, and it's going to make the building better, it's going to make it a better human experience, the chair is going to be a better chair, the couch is going to be a better couch, I allow it to happen. Mm-hmm. And I think that's because of my time in football. It's like, at some point, it's so much not about, you know, did we make the play, it's did we win the game. And when it comes to like designing, that's kind of what I've kind of taken through. It's like the death of ego for the success of the greater good.
Mm-hmm. So you always were a really outspoken voice in the locker room. And you're still really outspoken. You even wrote a book. And I think you have something to say. You want to tell people something. What does that drive come?
Man, it comes from my grandmother. My grandma, she just passed away last year, Rebecca Leonard. And she was just like, Mamusha was just like raw and honest.
Yeah.
And like, she said what she said and she meant it in the way. And she believed in something. My grandfather believed in whatever he believed in. My father, my mother. Like, I came from a group of people in a community that was committed to the truth and committed to the people. So as a black man growing up in America, I never like fell in love with the idea of being just an athlete. I was always thinking about my humanity at every single level. I was always like, okay, I grew up, my players I watched was, you know, I loved Alan Page. I loved John Abraham. But when I talk about, I love, you know, Muhammad Ali, John Carlos, Dr. Harry Edwards, you know, all these people who made significant, Paul Robeson, like these intellectual people who thought about the body and conquered the body, but also conquered the mind, but then also conquered the true thing that we all are chasing. And that's the commitment to humanity, the commitment to, doesn't matter what we do, at the end of it, if we're not connected to how each human is experiencing their time on the planet, and we become so consumed with ourselves and we consume with the titles and the things that come with success, and we forget that at some point in time, there's some other human that's suffering and you have to find a way to be committed to that. I think that's really why I've always spoken up, because I understand that. I understand that I've been around the world globally. I've seen the pain and the things that people are experiencing. And I never wanted to be silent because of a contract. I never wanted to be silent because I was a player. I always wanted to be committed to that truth, that committed to the identity of culture. I think that's really what it came down to for me.
So do you think NFL players and other athletes are responsible to
I think every human is responsible to that. I think every human should identify a problem or see something and not fall victim to, you know, being quiet or not being able to have the conversation about culture or did it. That's a responsibility of all of us. That's a responsibility of everybody, right? It's like, that's what keeps us from being animals. It's the morality that they're stuck in there, right? Because at some point, all humans have to make a moral choice of how will they represent, or how will they think about humanity? At what point do we become numb to societal ills of what we see? So it's regardless of how we feel. It's like, at some point, we all are trying to find a way to hide. We have to find a way not to hide from that. We have to find a way to rip past that. And when we all look at it, we take off, if we got naked, we took off everything that was on us, we would see that we are all just humans. Doesn't matter if we're black, doesn't matter if we're white, doesn't matter what we are. It's like, that's a human being. And I think until everybody can identify and look at somebody and say, you know what, get rid of all that. I see human. I think that's really what it comes down to.
So to wrap it up, I would like to ask you some rapid fire questions. I ask you something and you just answer on the point. Is it cool?
Yeah.
Cool. What's the first German word you learned since you got here?
Hallo. I learned that. I said every morning. Okay, some kind of Coke or something.
Let's say we had a time machine. Which decade would you travel to and why?
I mean, being a black man, you really can't travel to too many decades. It's like, look, Mario, I can't go to 1469. I can't go to Amsterdam. I think I'm going to just stay in the 2020s. You can't. What you going to do with a time machine? Where you going to go? Oh, before white people came to Africa, I'll go. That'll be my time.
Okay.
Well, I mean, yeah, I'm very limited in like where I can go, you know?
We white people got a privilege.
White people, you know, I want to go to 1930. I want to go to 19, just go to 17, something.
If you could relive one moment from your career on an endless loop, which one would it be?
Oh, one moment from an endless loop? Man, it'd probably be that game against the 49ers.
Yeah.
Man, it was so intense, man. Like it was like a adrenaline rush. I remember like this one play that Earl Thomas, he he stripped, he made a fumble and I picked it up. I almost broke my knee. But I remember the crowd going so crazy that I couldn't even, like, it was so, my helmet was shaking, you know, because it was just so, like, that would be the, that was, to me, that was the most fun game I ever played in, was the 49ers versus us.
Yeah, so 49ers was the best rivalry in the NFC West?
The 49ers was the best. You know, Arizona Cardinals was good at that time, too. Like, people forget that Arizona Cardinals
hurt a lot in Arizona.
yeah, but Arizona was, like, the team, too, that I would say, like, Larry Fitzgerald, Carlos Dansby, all those kind of guys. Like, that was a hard team to beat, too.
Which moment in your career shaped you as the most as a person, not just as a player?
Man, getting cut.
Yeah?
I mean, getting cut in my rookie year, I think that kind of, like, put me into, I wasn't drafted, and then I made a team and got cut, and I realized that at that point that it changed me. It made me realize that it was a business and I had to, like, attend to it like that.
Yeah, sure. Quick round of this or that. Playing in the snow in Green Bay or in 95-degree Florida heat?
Florida, 100%.
Okay.
I grew up in Texas, so it's like, heat was nothing. Like, sometimes people be like, it's hot. I be like, is it? You know, like, it's kind of like.
Teaming up with Cliff Averill to make Colin Kaepernick's life miserable once again on the field, or recovering a Drew Brees fumble one more time?
Kaepernick. I do Kaepernick.
Perfect.
He got that whole Afro thing. I don't get it.
Yeah. Bill Belichick or Pete Carroll?
Oh, Pete Carroll. I respect Bill Belichick, so don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
I like the way that Bill Belichick does. He is a genius in the game. For me, with my personality, I fit better with Coach Carroll. Mm-hmm. Like, because I'm from the South, I don't do well with military people that well, like, militant way of thinking of people. I do better with Coach Carroll's, like, somebody who's just, like, more, like, hey, do what you're supposed to do type thing, you know? Yeah. Versus, like, I think I do better with Coach Carroll's and, like, Raheem Morris and, like, Doug Peterson's and stuff like that.
All right. Two pumps or three pumps?
Depends what time of day.
Okay. Nickname, Worldwide Mike or Black Santa?
Margiela Mike.
Okay.
I like Margiela Mike.
Okay, cool.
You know, Margiela's my brand.
Yeah. Tackling Marshawn Lynch in training or chasing down Todd Gurley in a game?
Oh, I would say Adrian Peterson. Just because I played against Adrian Peterson for so long in college,
yeah,
the NFL.
All right, yeah.
So, like, I got to see him at so many different levels, and he was always the hardest person. I remember... I was like, we're about to beat Oklahoma. We were like number 12. I think they were number 2 or something. And thank you so much, Greg.
Yeah, I thought about it. Adrian Peterson or Todd Gurley. And then I come to the end. Yeah, like, it's NFC West 2 times a year. Maybe Todd Gurley, but I should have taken Adrian Peterson for the question.
It was 3rd and 20.
Yeah.
Against Oklahoma. I saw his eyes. You know, he had like some, I don't know. You know, you look at somebody and you can see something like, not that guy. Not him today. You know what I'm saying? Like, you might want to fight somebody, and then you start to look at him, you'd be like, you know what? Like, he's looking like he'll go further than I would. You know what I'm saying? And he had that look of 3rd and 20. They ran a draw. He ran all the way back, broke every single tackle, and ran for a touchdown. And ever since then, I was like, damn. So playing against him, I'll say that was probably, I'd rather play against him again and get my look back.
Perfect. So now you know the taste of an American hot dog, and now you know the taste of a German bratwurst or a German hot dog?
I like the German one. It's more flavor.
Yeah?
Yeah, it's probably healthier too. I mean, it's all the waste of pigs. Who knows?
Yeah, I don't know. It's pretty fatty.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you.
This was very, very fun, and I hope you have a great time in Germany.
Okay. Thank you, man.
Touchdown, Seahawks!
Weitere Infos zu den German Seahawkers gibt's natürlich auch auf unserer Website unter germanseahawkers.com.